We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Previously on Gresh and Keefe.
She's doing like rails off of dudes that she's hanging out with. Like, you put that in a book, yeah. You're going to pique my interest.
Bumping rails, and you're like, oh, Jesus. God.
This is Gresh and Keefe.
Like a wounded lion almost. I'm not right. You know, I feel good at times, but when I'm running, I still feel it. Now
I'm at your neck.
Andy Gresh.
I think Houston has mentally moved on from him. That somehow this will be settled, or he will serve his discipline for the league, or whatever punishment he has coming, the Philadelphia Eagles should be waiting.
Rich Keefe.
You're building a team around two young players, you know, and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. You know, them growing into leadership roles, them being able to bring everybody together. That's what excites me, honestly. That's the biggest thing.
Gresh and Keefe starts right now.
He's got delts now.
Send nudes.
On WEEI.
Oh, boy, the improvement of the Boston Red Sox have already begun, or has already begun, and it happens from within, and that's where we start here this morning as the Red Sox are getting ready to start the second half of the year, and of course, a matchup against the Yankees. So you know what that means, Rich?
What does that mean?
Oh, special Thursday night baseball. Every ESPN analyst on the planet.
Get there.
They're rolling out all of the...
Well, it's the only game.
The, like, draft nerds.
Everybody
and all
else
that.
Gets the extra day off. And, for some reason, they gotta get these guys, shoehorn them into a Thursday.
You know what it is, Keith? Is
Kike was pissed about that.
Well,
by the way.
I know he was. He was like, what the hell are we doing here? Well, they've given up on just jamming it down everybody's throat on Sunday Night Baseball. So what the hell? Standalone Thursday night, let's put it on ESPN, and there we go. And I say that in part in jest because it feels like every time the folks of the Four Letter Network can just jam Red Sox Yankees down the throats of America, they look to do so. But if you realistically looked at it at the beginning of the year, you thought there would have been a hell of a lot more skin in the game for these two teams at this point. And in reality, the Yankees are kind of hoping they go on a run so that their GM doesn't start tearing them down. And for the Red Sox, it's can they pick up where they left off?
Yeah, this would be a great series if the Yankees were any good. Like, if they were playing decent baseball, then you'd say this is a marquee series. All this really is a chance for the Red Sox to put away the Yankees. With a couple of weeks before the deadline, like you said, like, they might have to realistically consider being sellers.
Yes.
Because what kind of run are they going to make? They're kind of jumbled up with a couple other teams. I think they and the Blue Jays basically have the same record. They're both looking up at the Rays in the division. They're in the wild card, and obviously the Red Sox as well. And they've been a mess. They got one starter who can go, and even he's had all his issues and problems and complaints and everything else. Their lineup isn't very good. You got to question whether their manager's the right guy, whether their general manager's the right guy. Like, it's a great time to be a Red Sox fan. You're cruising in first place despite, you know, a little bump here right before the All-Star break. But to be eight games clear of the Yankees right now is great.
It's rather amazing. And when you look at it, it's, okay, what is the bigger surprise? That the Yanks are only three games over 500 or that the Red Sox are 19 over? And if you're going to be realistic about it, it's a little bit of both because – to your point, if the Yankees were just a couple of games better and they were only five back in the standings, let's say.
Right.
And then it would look and feel very different.
And if you could, it's a four-game series here, and then there's the series with Toronto, and then it's another four-game series. So there's eight games with the Yankees here coming up, and you almost think the Yankees have to go 6-2 over that stretch.
Agreed.
Against the Red Sox. Something like that.
Yeah, they can't just come away
if
with
they
a
split,
little
forget
right.
It.
Forget
that's
about
nothing.
It.
That's not going to.
But you know, you mentioned the Red Sox second half schedule, and it's New York, Toronto, New York, Toronto, Tampa Bay.
Yeah, real creative.
So it you're right. A, it's there's no creativity in there whatsoever. But by the end of this month, the Red Sox could have themselves a pretty significant lead in this division, and that includes being able to have a series where you maybe can separate a little bit against Tampa Bay, because Toronto and New York are, to me, they're the exact same team in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
They're built differently, obviously, but both those teams are very, very similar, and tonight it is the Major League debut of Jarren Duran. And I know that you and I talked about, well, Chris Sale could be coming, Tanner Houck could be coming. Now you get Jarren Duran called up, and you have to assume he's in the lineup tonight, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah, it'd be crazy. It'd be stupid if he wasn't.
That's right.
In other words. So, yeah, you look at some of the in-house additions that they could possibly make. We've spent a lot of time talking about the pitchers and when Tanner Houck, what his role is going to be. Chris Sale, if you can get anything out of him. But how about a position player? How about somebody else out there? Because, again, there are tweaks that can be made. It's still leadoff. It's still first base. If you want to improve first or second base, and even an outfielder. And whether it's a bona fide fourth outfielder where you can find a platoon, or, let's face it, there's probably a spot to be an everyday outfielder, too. It's not like they have three guys. This isn't the days of, you know, Betts, Benintendi, and Bradley, where you're like, all right, those are your three guys.
Right, pencil them in, see you later.
No, like, you have Verdugo, and then you're kind of going back and forth with some of the matchups, and, you know, is J.D. Martinez ever going to get out there? You're just going to DH him? Like, there's things like that that they can kind of tweak, but there's an opportunity for Duran to be an impactful player starting now and getting in the lineup more often than not. I think it could happen, and it's sort of a two-week little showcase here prior to the deadline.
Well,
that's
the road I was going
to
go down.
I think
do
that's
you
what it
think
is.
There is a little bit of showcasing going on here?
Yeah, well, showcasing not like to trade him, but
right.
Showcasing to say, all right, this guy is completely overmatched by major league pitchers. We'll send him down, and we're going to acquire another fourth.
Got to go get like a middle of the road outfielder.
Find somebody else.
Need a solid veteran.
But if he shows up and he looks like he fits in, and you're like, okay, you kind of got something here.
So if he rakes for 10 days.
Even that's a small sample size, but I bet Cora can kind of tell.
I agree.
Like, this guy's got it or he doesn't. And it's not even going to be a stats thing. It's just going to be like a feel thing.
Yep.
Like, hey, does this guy belong on a major league club? Like, he's 24, right? It's not like
he's
19
24,
or something
right.
Insane. Like, he's 24. This is his first year at AAA, and I know this is a real thing. Apparently, the Worcester Stadium allows for more ya-ya ding-dongs.
Apparently
it's a real
so.
Hitter's ballpark.
It is.
Because if you look at Jarren Duran, he's not exactly a power hitter during his minor league career, and all of a sudden, the ball is flying for him this year.
He's way bigger than I thought. I looked at he's like 6'2", over 200.
Yeah.
Well, because, you know, when you think of center fielders being called up, you think of, like, Jacoby Pusberry and all that. And
no, it's not
those
him.
Tiny guys who ultimately don't want to grind it out.
Right.
And then you get a guy like Duran, who's a big strapping kid. And to your point, like, when you look at him, it's like, oh, you'd think he'd be able to hit the ball out of the ballpark. But he really didn't do it until he got to Worcester.
No, he didn't at all. It's 15 home runs this year in 46 games. And in 2019, and, remember, last year was like a debacle.
Had 15 before that in
say,
his whole career.
2019 in 132 games. So again, he's played 46 games this year.
Yep.
And has 15 Long Johnsons. In 2019, he played 132 games between Portland and Salem, hit five.
Five. That's a big improvement right there. More than a ballpark.
Another typical cash giveaway. Here's this hour's code word on WEEI.
Sean's going to love this. This hour's code word is CAKE. C-A-K-E. Text CAKE to 72881 now for your chance to win $1,000 at our national cash contest. Message and data rates apply. Don't text and drive. Text CAKE to 72881. Hopefully the Red Sox make the Yankees cake eaters once again over these next 2 weeks. And it really could not only shape the American League Eastern Division race, as we just kind of highlighted, but if Duran comes up and plays well and you start to feel good about Chris Sale in these starts, Kiva does make me wonder how sort of with what sort of intensity, I guess I could put it, will Heim Bloom look outside the organization to be able to bring people in to help out? Not that they're going to rest on their laurels, But if Jaren Duran comes up and plays well and Alex Cora has that feel about him and Chris Sale, everything has been pretty good, I think Sale is going to be a contributor down the stretch. It's the whole, can you just wait to properly bring him back and give him those minor league starts? And then whether Tanner Houck comes up or not, that's injury dependent, obviously. Right. That's the big sort of outlier in all of this. But if you're Heim Bloom, kind of feels like you can be really selective right now, but the next 10 days are really going to sort of shape the fire with which Heim Bloom might have to go shopping. I mean, is there a chance he doesn't do anything at the deadline?
No, I don't think there is. I think he's too aggressive, and I think he is a guy that we've seen, you know, the especially this offseason, sort of the roster construction that he did. Because I don't look at last year as a really a real year. I think it was sort of a lot of resetting going on.
I think last year in sports overall, people, it really we've got to put it with a caveat.
But this year, you saw how he was pretty aggressive. And even with the in-house stuff, you know, because we talked yesterday with Will Fleming, and he was still talking about adding a starter.
Yeah.
And I think that is a great idea, because haven't you gotten more out of Richards, Perez, and Pivetta than you ever would have imagined? And if you're just going to rely on that the rest of the way, and then if it all those guys come back to form, are you going to be like, ah, I didn't see this coming? Like, I think we've already even seen it with Perez a little bit towards the end. Like, he's giving all he has. It's not a whole lot.
So you're even a little nervous about Pivetta as well.
I am. Yeah, I am.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely am.
Because when Will mentioned Martin Perez, it was, okay, that's more of a, we're at the expiration date. It's time to throw out the milk. You know, it's time to throw out the milk because he's expired versus, well, maybe this guy can kind of give it to us. And it's interesting that it might be a, okay, you're not going to get any more out of the guy, so it's time to replace him versus, leave him your fifth starter and they'll hit their way around.
Well, as good as the starters have been and as healthy as they have been, and a lot of them have had career-type years, again, you fast forward to a playoff series, I feel pretty good about Evaldi. After that, kind of a crapshoot, isn't it?
Right.
And that's why I think you're hoping for Sale. You're hoping for maybe Tanner Houck, and then maybe there's that other addition. And it doesn't have to be the extreme Max Scherzer either, but maybe it's somebody else that is still slots ahead of Richards, Perez, and Pivetta.
Rental player?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I think rental player is fine. Then you can reset it in the offseason. You got to figure out whether you want to bring Rodriguez back. You got to figure out, you know, what you're going to do with your rotation next year. Because I like the bullpen. I'll tell you, I like the bullpen. And by the way, if you add another starter, you probably take one of those other arms and stick them in the pen anyway.
Well, they'd be the long guy, but
they probably would be the long guy.
I'm with you on that.
But they have six guys right now who are used to pitching late in games, or at least are used to, you know, protecting leads, or in Barnes's case, finishing games. I'm kind of good.
Barnes and Ottavino on the back end have been as good as anybody in baseball this year.
Taylor's been, after a kind of a rocky start, lights out.
Yeah.
I don't know, last time he's allowed a run. And then they have three other guys that you're like, all right, I'll take Whitlock. Like, again, in the sixth inning or the fifth inning, and that's if a starter goes awry, and then you still have those guys. So I think they're kind of built pretty well in the back end, whereas the starter, sure, maybe there's a starter. But if I could take anything, I think it still might be a first baseman. I don't think Bobby Dalbec is... You can't write the guy off for his career, but I don't think he's really.
But if you replaced him for the second half of the year, or he became the platoon guy who only got at bats, you know, every third game, then he's maybe earned that at this point.
Yeah.
Considering the expectations have changed for this group, and I'm with you. I think the easy fit outside the organization would be go find a first baseman. After that, I think you're doing some selective shopping because you have some people in-house that you have to take into account in that as well.
And I know Maloney was on Whit Merrifield, you know, a guy who made the All-Star team and could be your second baseman and your leadoff hitter and just pencil him in every day. Like that, I think that would be a really nice addition. I don't know what that would cost. You don't want to gut your farm system for somebody like that.
But trade him Franchi Cordero.
If you, yeah, you can have him. He's, I'm talking five tools, maybe, or zero tools. Hard to say. But if you put him at the top of the lineup, I think that kind of solidifies everything. And then, you know, the games that Kike Hernandez does play, you put him at ninth and kind of just stretch out the entire lineup. So, yeah, in a weird way, the bigger needs are probably
position players,
lineup guys,
right? Which is really weird for a Red Sox team because normally your nine are set. It's, I got to go get pitching.
Right.
Whereas this year, it's it might be a little different. The NBA Finals are looking a little different this morning because Giannis and the Bucks got it done last night in Game 4 at home against Phoenix. You know, I kind of half said to you, series doesn't start until someone wins on the road, and right now, this is shaping up to be one of those series that the first team that gets the road win, you know what I mean?
Like, or
I mean,
just the home team wins out.
Or the home teams win out, which is very rare. Yeah. Normally, there's that one sort of, and the Bucks fans, Bucks in six. You know, they were going nuts last night. But Giannis played great, did a great job in the fourth quarter. And my God, that block that
incredible
he had
block.
At a, I mean,
that's
just
an all-timer.
It really is. And I know that there were people this morning, well, it's not LeBron in game seven. No,
okay.
It isn't.
It was game four.
However,
it was a must-win game.
It changed the series. That was that's going to, if the Bucks go on to win the NBA championship now, there are going to be a lot of people that are going to go back to that moment and that block because the place erupted and the Bucks players reacted to it like, oh, my God, that's our unicorn making a play for us. And then there was sort of a springboard from there.
It was an awesome game, too.
It really was.
It was a really fun game to watch. And even though, you know, a guy like Chris Paul was really struggling, but Devin Booker couldn't miss for a while, and then they had to sit him out because he was in foul trouble. And then he actually...
Booker hit that over pretty quick last
night. Oh, he smoked the over. He crushed the over. And then he really should have fouled out of the game.
Twice.
They didn't call it. Yeah, one of them was like, he legit tried to foul a guy. They didn't call it. The Bucks were kind of fortunate because Giannis got the offensive rebound. Should have been a foul on Jrue Holiday, who, by the way, is trying to lose the series for the Bucks.
Jrue Holiday
he fits in with Team USA pretty nicely, doesn't he? He's going to join that and fit right in. Like, guys, I can miss every shot, too. He's horrible right now.
He's really bad.
So bad. He's supposed to be the third best player. He's supposed to be this big improvement over Eric Bledsoe. Mm-hmm. He's not. I think they'd rather have Eric Bledsoe right now. But it was a great game, and now you have yourself a great series because it's 2-2, and I think they have to have a lot of confidence in themselves now after the way they were able to kind of handle things the last couple of games. And I didn't know who I was going to root for in the series because I was just happy it wasn't LeBron, it wasn't Durant, it wasn't Kyrie.
You mean team or player?
Team-wise.
Oh, okay,
so team-wise. So going into it, I was like, I don't really know. I just hope it's a good series. I am definitely rooting for the Bucks.
Really?
I can't stand Chris Paul.
Oh,
I think that's the biggest thing.
I like that.
I can't stand Chris Paul. Even Jay Crowder kind of rubs me the wrong way. He's flopping around on the court last night. I know he got hit in the face once by Giannis. So
that's right.
He should have gone down there. But some of the other times he's flopping around. I don't like the Suns. And everybody just kind of anointing Chris Paul after the first two games. Like, oh, once he gets his ring, where does that put him on the all-time list? It's like, he hasn't gotten his ring yet. Why don't you just wait a little bit? And I like Giannis and I like Middleton. Middleton was a killer last night.
Middleton is showing that he has A-plus level game in him. Remember
we talked about him
as being that wild card guy?
Yep.
Last night. 40 points.
And
he
was great. You know what it kind of reminds me of? Because I still think, even though their games are different, Giannis is very comparable to Kevin Garnett in his career, where he was an MVP, he was an all-NBA player for many years, but never won anything, and kind of needs that other guy to hit some shots for him. And so if Chris Middleton can kind of be the Paul Pierce type for him, then that combination can win. Like, on their own, like, everybody does the stupid, who's Batman, who's Robin? Like, neither one probably are Batman on their own. But you wonder now, I'm starting to think the combination between the two of them, like, Giannis can do everything but probably close the game at the end. And Chris Middleton, at least after last night, can close the game at the end. So I am full on board the Fear the Deer Bucks bandwagon right now.
Yeah, Middleton was just a force last night, and I know this will drive you nuts because this is going to sound very Marcus Smartish.
Okay.
Do you know who took the most three-pointers for the Phoenix Suns last night? Jay Crowder.
Yeah. Oh my God.
He led the way with 9.
Yeah. He just launches.
Bridges, Paul, and Booker combined shot 7 three-pointers. And only Bridges made one of them. Otherwise, everybody wore the collar, but it was Crowder who was 3 for 9 from three last night. That's where you look and go, all right, what do you, one or two, okay, 9?
Devin Booker scored 42 points and didn't make a three.
He did not,
Isn't that the weirdest stat you've probably ever seen?
And
like, in today's NBA, and a player
only,
like that.
And he only made 8 free throws.
Right. He was a killer. He almost took over Chris Paul's game. Like, Chris Paul didn't have it, and he usually shoots all those mid-range shots, and Devin Booker was getting them. He was taking guys off the dribble. He was hitting contested shots, but didn't hit a three and still came up with 42 points. Like, what is this? Michael Jordan?
Do you think Chris Paul's hurt?
Playing
through something? He's been so inconsistent since coming back from COVID or whatever issue he
probably
had.
Is, but it's also one of those things where everybody is. We know Giannis is. Like,
oh,
Giannis,
yeah.
We saw it. He had to miss games. So I bet Paul is. I bet Booker kind of is. Booker, look, he was awful in game 3. And then he came back. He was great in game four. So I bet they're all dealing with a little something.
Right now, if the Bucks win the series, who's the MVP?
Giannis.
If Phoenix wins the series, who's the MVP?
Great question, because it looked like Paul, but now it's swinging towards Booker. It'll probably be whoever has the better closeout game, and then the voters will be swayed by
prisoner of the moment, yep, type deal.
Because right now I think it's a tie between Booker and Paul, don't you think?
I would agree, yeah.
So if game six or game seven, one of the guys has a great performance, I bet they would get it.
You know, DeAndre Ayton, who had such a great early round series, early rounds, he was awesome. Mm-hmm. He only had 6 points last night, but that guy had 17 rebounds and 5 assists.
Uh-huh.
Finding other ways to help. Yep. Like, you know, Chris Paul really didn't do, he was a turnover machine last night.
He was horrible.
5 turnovers, yeah, for Chris Paul is a lot. 7 assists for Chris Paul is not very much.
And he only got to, he scored 10 points, but the last two was a meaningless layup at the end of the game where they just like let him go to the basket.
Oh, so
that
he
doesn't
totally,
even count. Like he just needed that
he
one.
He patted that,
yeah,
one.
Yeah, he was,
yeah,
trying to get some stats.
Oh, this will get
bit
me going for game, like, five. No. They Olay'd him and like, here you go.
Yeah, he had one of the worst games you're going to see of him. Like, and that's the thing. That's the only reason why Drew Holiday, being as bad as he was, didn't kill him, was because Chris Paul also had a bad game.
Yep, very much so. And the 617, local kid Connaughton for the Bucks, knocked down some big shots last night.
He did. Yeah, from Arlington. Incredible athlete, because he was a guy who could have been a starting pitcher in baseball. He was like drafted, he had it, I think, Notre Dame.
Didn't, oh, he's like both Brady, yeah.
He's a great pitcher.
Oh, he's Jeff Samardzija, except,
yeah, no,
for basketball.
He's like there Samardzija, right, and he chose to play basketball. And he had, I think it was in game two or game three, a couple of timely shots that just missed that could have either tied the game or brought him a little bit closer. But in this game, he was great for them off the bench. He's a good rebounding guard, and then he hit a couple of open threes and was huge. Yeah, they don't win if it wasn't for a couple of his shots.
And also going on, it is rare that we have an event going on live while we are on the air.
That doesn't
bump us off the air, but it is the Open Championship across the pond, where, I don't want to stooge it off because there's some names in there that I want to hear Shime say.
I still call it the British Open, by the way.
There's a whole big thing.
I'm a British Open.
The British Open,
guy.
Yeah.
It's the Open. It's the British Open because there's also a U.S. Open. I don't call that one the Open. I call that one the
so
U.S. Open.
It's so douchey, right?
Well, that's how it
like,
is.
It's the whole...
Yeah,
it's like the Montreal, we're better hockey fans than everyone. Like, you know,
yeah,
it's like, well,
yeah,
golf was invented here.
Yeah.
So we're going to call it the Open Championship.
I can't tell you how much I love golf majors, by the way.
It's a good time. It's a nice little time.
Extremely
out there.
Exciting.
Did you sprinkle any money on this one?
Sure did. My guy still sitting at plus 3,500. Might have to sprinkle some more, depending on how he does today.
Right. Well, there you go. We'll get you updated on everything going on with the Open Championship. Cam Newton spoke this morning on ESPN. We'll bring that to you. Damon Stoudemire is the new assistant coach of the Boston Celtics. He joined a favorite of yours, Rasheed Wallace.
Oh, I love Sheed.
And Bonzi Wells on a podcast where
they get Detlef Schrempf and Brian Grant on that show too. Who else can you get? Steve Smith,
Scottie Pippen. Rick Edelman is the coach.
Yeah, Rick Edelman was up there.
He's on the Eddie House podcast.
Eddie House, that's right. But listening to Damon Stoudemire, he's got some thoughts on what he can bring to the two youngins, Tatum and Brown. We'll do a little guess the Google autofill. A day in the life of a soccer gate crasher. It is everything you would expect and more, including something inserted into a bum. That's at 11:45.
Wow. Well, I'm not going anywhere.
What if I said the guy did cocaine before that, too? Not untrue. We'll continue with our Patriots look-see. We'll get to the defense. And Joe Judge told a real interesting story about interviewing with Bill Belichick. Adam Schefter's got some NFL whatnot out there. And, of course, you at 617-779-7937. 3 T's up and running. You can watch this show, weei.com/watch. That takes you right to the Twitch to where you can take a look at us. I'm extra creepy today, so I'll just leave that to you to have to go on Twitch and check it out. Shime's manning the Twitch chat, Twitter at Gresh Keefe, and you can text us 37937. Here with the latest from across the pond and everything else, Shime is trending.
Like the show? Of course you do.
I hate this guy.
Tell a friend about Gresh and Keefe on WEEI.
You know, I just felt
like it was a step. I was a step behind when I came back, but that was nobody to blame. You know, it was just that's just how the NFL works. You know, and with me not having as much, I would say, security and knowing the system because I was still learning. I'm still learning, truth be told. So you know, those things, you know, kind of happen, and you kind of rely on things that, you know, you can. You know, you can give yourself rules in this offense as far as the philosophies, you know, standpoint. And I was just, you know, playing catch up.
Cam Newton talking about the COVID recovery and the odd timing last year of everything that went down. No preseason, no mini camps. And Cam sort of learning on the fly. The Patriots quarterback spoke to ESPN Radio a little earlier today. 10:33, Gresham Keefe here with the WEEI Sports Radio Network, WEEI.com, and the Odyssey app. In looking back, we just kind of mentioned that last year, different for everybody in every sport. Championships that are, you know, the Lakers. I know you're of the opinion.
Sham titles.
Sham title, yeah, yeah. All that stuff, yeah, right?
Of course.
I am so excited to see Cam Newton playing preseason, as crazy as that sounds, because there were times where he'd go to the line of scrimmage and you could tell he didn't know what to do. Yeah, it was, there would be in football, they call it a check with me, where you have two plays called, quarterback goes up, tells you where to go, what to do. I think there were times where Cam went up there and it was like, uh-oh, I don't know which side to go to.
Right.
Now, I do think there was kind of a whole bunch of events that sort of led to his lack of knowledge and depth of understanding in this offense. Now it shouldn't be that way. I'm not expecting him to have the Tom Brady level of knowledge in this offense, but I'm expecting him to not be lost at times like it felt like he was last year.
I have zero faith in an improvement out of Cam Newton. I just thought he talks the best game in the world, and it's why he's so easy to root for, but it's, you know, fool me once, fool me twice, fool me 10 times. Every time, and I know it's seasons are different, but week to week, he would explain away a bad performance to the point where I was like, okay, he's learned from that, so he'll be better next week. Nope. Oftentimes got worse, and it was just so many things. Then even in the offseason, it started to come up again, and it was, all right, so it's COVID and practice time and receivers and this and terminology and practice time and Zoom meetings and this, that, the other. All right, well, other teams around the league had that. Other teams around the league had quarterbacks on new teams for the first time. I believe one of them won a Super Bowl. There's also rookie quarterbacks who have never been in the league and never had a preseason, never had a preseason game. They look pretty good. So I have zero faith in a Cam Newton. Because let's say he knows what the play is this time. Now hit a 7-yard out. Can you do that?
Well, that's why I mentioned the knowledge and to see that the guy wasn't lost, because I do think there were times last year where his lack of confidence in his own understanding in the offense definitely hurt him, but that doesn't mean he could still throw the damn ball.
Right.
That doesn't mean that's he could still hit the guy on the slant. It just means that he's going to be more. Now, what I expect is to see a more confident Newton to the point to where every once in a while he'll rip a slant and put it on a guy and say, wow, that looked like a confident throw. Because I know around the corner could be the 3rd and 10. I've got to read a defense and, oh, crap, I got nowhere to go. Yeah. And I'm just going to tuck it and run. That's why to me it was I want to know the knowledge and how comfortable he is. Because if he feels comfortable, then you would hope that the play would then get better. Mm-hmm. But if he's comfortable and the play doesn't get better, then we've seen everything we need to see with this guy, and we can start to turn the page because, yes, he knows it, but then it's to the point where he can't execute it. Like, at least for a part of last year, given the complexities of this offense, and I do think that by about week 14, the coaches down there were like, F this. It ain't going right.
We have no
continuity. Right. We don't know who we are. We don't know what we are. So for my hope is if he's mentally better, he'll be physically better. But that's going to show real quick.
Maybe. Yeah, because I also thought even with the rushing stats that he had, he only had a couple of games to me where he looked right running the ball.
Agreed.
And one of the times where, you know, like go back to his MVP season, he was just so dynamic. And not that he was ever built on speed, but he felt even a step slower. It seemed like he was even a little bit easier to bring down than he once was. So if he doesn't have that dynamic, and if he's not doing that, and he's a below average passer, well, now you're not even getting much out of that position.
And they didn't know, in part, what to do with him last year. I'm convinced that it didn't. Well, no. I mean, again, if we go back to what was the... With Tom Brady, we knew there was always something they could do at an elite level. And some years early on, it was running the ball with Corey Dillon. And some years it was, well, let's spread it out and we're just going to find a way to win a Super Bowl with Edelman and Gronk. And sure as hell enough, yeah, they found a way to do that. There was none of that last year. It's almost like there wasn't an offensive identity. And it's interesting because we have now just sat here for 5 minutes talking about something that Cam Newton addressed a little bit earlier. And that was Cam being asked about people making it all about him, even though there is more talent on the offense this year.
That don't make me nervous. If anything, it excites me. I can say a lot of times in my career, I haven't been a favorite. You know, I've always been a guinea pig. But yet, at the same time, that those things is why you play the game. This is why you play the most important position in sports. That's why I get up. That's why I attack the day the way I attack it. Those are the things that, you know, happens the way it happens. Aaron Rodgers isn't who he is because he's comfortable. Tom Brady isn't who he is because he's comfortable. You know, all these elite players aren't who they are because they are comfortable. You know, you have to feel comfortable being uncomfortable. That's what it is.
I mean, he always says the right thing. I do question, like, the guinea pig line.
I'll tell you why.
What does he mean by that?
Because when you, if you go, to me, the comparable to Cam Newton coming out in a lot of ways was Steve McNair. But when you look at Steve McNair back in the mid to late 90s, and even Donovan McNabb for an example, it was got to stay in the pocket. You got to learn to stay in the pocket. And then those guys would run and stuff. I think with Cam, he was the first guy, because he came in 2011, where it was, he's such a physical specimen, we have to take advantage of his running ability. Whereas I think a decade earlier, a quarterback like Cam Newton, it would have been like Donovan McNabb. We're going to put you in the box, and you need to learn how to operate from the pocket. Whereas he was the first guy. Like, Michael Vick is a bit of an outlier, because to me,
that was also speed. He like was Vick and Lamar Jackson are more quarterback, similar.
Right?
Yeah, like Cam Newton.
Cam was kind of a quarterback who had the ability to run, and his size was like nothing that we've ever seen at that position for a runner.
But I mean, I guess
that's my best guess.
Yeah, and you might be right. I just think the answer to the question might be a little bit different than what I was expecting, because this was a guy who was the number one overall pick. He was the starter day one. He was never in jeopardy. Every year he was in Carolina, he was never uncomfortable.
Yeah,
if he threw a pick, okay, get him the next time. He loses a game, fine. He loses five in a row, fine. You'll get him the next time.
Put in Wenke?
Right, yeah. You're not going there. Or Jimmy Clausen. Like, he wasn't going to take time away from Cam Newton. Whereas now, I think it's the first time we're like, hey, wait a minute. This team, because you're talking about all these additions, and yet you're still focused on the quarterback. But Cam knows it's the most important position on the field. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of discussion around him. But there's also the first real chance for him to lose a starting quarterback job.
True.
It was never going to happen before. And even last year where you thought it could, turns out it didn't, because Bill Belichick stuck with him until the bitter end. Whereas this year, things have to be different.
Have to be. And it starts with Cam actually producing on the field and showing us in camp that he has gotten better and that he has gotten more comfortable. And Cam was asked if he takes Tom Brady winning a Super Bowl in Tampa Bay as a personal challenge.
Yeah, but those are the obvious. But it goes back to putting a lot of things into perspective. This is not a me versus him thing. This is not a, as far as I see it, it's more about what we do. You know, how our approach is, you know, moving forward. He is an exceptional talent. You know, we all know that, and it needs no debate. So, you know, for me, it's controlling the things that I can control, my preparation, my outlook on the game, you know, doing things that I know I can and am capable of doing. That's what it is.
It's not a sexy answer, but he's 1,000,000% right. Like Tom Brady, look, here's the Tom Brady effect. They got to week 12 in Tampa, and they were 7-5. And Brady walked in and said, hey, dummy coach, how about we start running the offense my way? And that coach said, okay, fine.
Yeah.
And look at what happened to them in the end, where the coach was stubborn, and then they finally relented, and Brady went and did his thing. That's not happening here. Bill Belichick is not going to blow up the offense and be like, well, we got this guy Cam Newton, so let's turn into, you know, what you would be in the, you know, in the Mac, you know, running the freaking option. Like, no, there's none
of
that.
I don't think, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think anybody compares Cam Newton to Tom Brady.
No.
If anything, it is a Bill Belichick-Tom Brady blood feud, and you're trying to figure out who's going to be better when it's all said and done between those two, because Tom Brady is so far head and shoulders above every other quarterback that Cam Newton doesn't even have to get compared to him. Like, no matter who you brought in here, like, of course he's not going to be Tom Brady. You just hope he's good, but he's not going to be Tom Brady. Like, you're never going to see another Tom Brady.
Tom Brady's got to the point to where there is no comparing to Tom Brady.
No, there isn't.
All the people who want to try to shoehorn everyone in there.
That's why you've had to change the argument.
And it's interesting because I do think from the Belichick end, it's twofold. Because let's say they do win one with Mac Jones, right?
Mm-hmm.
The narrative isn't going to be necessarily, oh, well, he found his new Tom Brady. The narrative will be Belichick found a way to build a third. It's almost now to the point where it's about Belichick, the GM, in building another winner,
right,
however he does it. Because if they win with Cam Newton, first of all, pigs would fly. But let's say they did do that.
The Super Bowl?
That might be the greatest coaching job ever when it's all said and done if he does it with Cam Newton.
Absolutely.
And if he does it with Mac Jones, it won't be, well, he found another Tom Brady. It'll just be they found another way to win. Because, you know, even in Tampa, I mean, who was one of the guys in that after that bye week, they really started to settle in and be a factor? It was Leonard Fournette, because it's not like they threw the ball 75 times a game in Tampa.
No.
The quarterback was able to subjugate his ego and be like, okay, this guy's going to help me win too, and look at what happened. So, to me, there is no comparison in any way, shape, or form in terms of Brady and Cam. You're right. It's more the Belichick narrative on all this. We will have more from Cam Newton coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. Make sure you give us a follow on Twitter. It's the easiest way to interact with the show at Gresh Keefe, at Keefe21, and at The Real Gresh, G-R-E-S-H. We will get to Damon Stoudemire and his comments about coming to Boston next hour and how he can help those young players. But up next, I was late to the office. Not the actual office that we work in. The office.
But you were also late today.
Right. Normally I'm here at 8. Today I got here at 8:40 because of traffic.
Traffic was a real son of a gun.
So I don't know about late technically. I think if I wasn't sitting here at 10, I'd be late.
But
the show, The Office.
The American sitcom.
The American sitcom. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, almost had an odd replacement for Steve Carell that I have to run by the TV people. And that includes you, John. A little pat on the head. That's next.
Did you know you can watch Gresh and Keefe?
My ass is sublime.
Just go to WEEI.com/watch. Twitch.tv/BostonWEEI.
I'm just going to put it this way.
Go ahead.
When Steve Carell left The Office, and the great character is Michael Scott.
One of the greatest characters of all time.
Apparently, the job was offered to Tony Soprano, James Gandolfini.
Yeah.
And the word out of Hollywood yesterday, there are some of the Sopranos stars. Apparently, there is a Talking Sopranos podcast.
Okay.
With it, Michael Imperioli and Steve Sciarippa dropped a bombshell on guest Ricky Gervais, saying that the Sopranos lead star James Gandolfini was given $3 million by HBO to not accept the role as the new Michael Scott on The Office. And NBC was dangling $4 million for Gandolfini to play him for one season. So HBO said, no, we'll give you just short of that to say no. So it was $4 million for him to replace Steve Carell.
Wow.
He got $3 million from HBO to say no. But James Gandolfini on The Office? Yeah. What am I missing here?
So they knew that when Michael Scott decided to leave, or Steve Carell decided to leave, and he was going to do movies and everything like that, that they were screwed. And there's two seasons of that show without Michael Scott, and they are unwatchable.
The James Spader run?
Yeah, so what happened is they ended up trying out a whole bunch of different people, and you know, people were filling in, and Will Ferrell was one of them, and he was great, but I, you know, that was sort of like a one-off.
You're not paying that guy.
I think Will Arnett jumped in there. I think Ricky Gervais jumped in there. They had a whole series of people that came in, and then it ended up being for a run James Spader. So, I mean, technically, Gandolfini could have done it. Like, you could have gone in a different direction because it's really just the boss of that office, and you can have any kind of personality you really want there. Like, Spader's character, Robert California, was very, very different than Michael Scott was. He was, but it was also worse. Like, it was, I know Spader's done some comedy and stuff like that, but Gandolfini would have been an interesting choice, and it would have been, that was just a desperate attempt at, like, all right, let's try to still be relevant.
And then you watch it and you're like, he's Tony Soprano. Like, yeah, I can't envision
him. But why was HBO so adamant not to have him go on
there?
That's
a great
question.
Did
they think it tainted the Sopranos?
I think there was a little bit of that, right? Because if just on principle, saying, oh, the guy who played Tony Soprano is going to replace the 40-year-old virgin.
But, like, he can have other roles.
No, of course.
And he could have played it almost like Tony Soprano if he wanted to.
But I would say this. I think for most people. Now, I know that you and John and Shime, you guys are cinephiles and you TV and movies and stuff like that. How many people can name one other character that James Gandolfini was really known for?
Yeah.
That went big time mainstream like Tony. So, like, everybody looks at him and they go, oh, it's Tony Soprano.
Oh, of course.
No one says that was the guy who wasn't he the love interest of someone in a movie or something like that?
So, the one I remember, and it might have been his debut, was True Romance.
Okay.
Was a Quentin Tarantino wrote it, and then Tony Scott directed it, and he played like a mob kind of enforcer type. And he has this scene with Patricia Arquette, which is one that's just insane. But that's where I remember him from. And that's where I think he kind of got on the map. And I'm sure whoever booked him for The Sopranos saw that and was like, all right, this guy can
definitely
do it.
David Chase, pretty smart.
But that's about it. Like, I don't really remember too many other things they did. He did, like, some sort of rom-com, didn't he, or something?
That's what I'm saying. That's the one. Yeah. Like, sitting on the edge of a
mountain. But no, he's like, and again, and Tony Soprano and Michael Scott might be the two best TV characters of all time. Like, they're on the short
list. You could make the argument, no question.
And it's just, yeah.
I would say Rose Nyland from The Golden Girls is up there,
way
too.
Up
Betty
there.
White.
Yeah, 100%.
That's
good call.
A great character.
From St. Olaf.
look at you.
Oh, yeah, huge fan. I'll have a little cheesecake, watch a little Golden Girls. But I'm just surprised that HBO would fight so hard against it, because I think you'd be able to. I wouldn't enjoy The Sopranos less had he starred in The Office for all season.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. However,
but hey,
I think
the $3 million did not work.
Damn straight. And I think I might have hated The Office with him there.
It was
so hard to get out of Carell mode.
I hated The Office without Carell, no matter what. I don't think there's anybody you could have replaced him with. I think the Will Ferrell one would have been the most kind of lateral, in the sense of, like, all right, you would have liked this guy. His character's name was D'Angelo Vickers. He would have been great. he's great, but
sounds like a guy. Sounds like one of the dudes who was one of the deflators for Brady. You know?
D'Angelo
Vickers, right? Yeah. Exactly. But how much would that have cost to bring on Will Ferrell long term?
I would imagine. I mean, right.
If Gandolfini got offered four, don't you think Will Ferrell would have been like, you're 7.5 for one
probably
season?
More. Yeah.
And then everybody
point,
would have fallen in love with it. And then it would have been like, what are we going to? Right, exactly. He would have been just stacking the cash as. That guy has, quite honestly, just on two Anchorman movies, let alone going streaking in the quad. We roll into hour two. Game three of the NBA Finals went down last night, but Damon Stoudemire is coming to Boston. He was on a Ball Is Life podcast with Rasheed Wallace and Bonzi Wells, and he talked extensively about Ime Udoka and the two young Celtic stars. We will hear from Damon Stoudemire next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 oh. O'Reilly Auto Parts.